Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series.
My guest today is Satya Dasgupta, CEO and founder of EdgeCortix. He's a seasoned technologist who has been at the front line of artificial intelligence systems for the past two decades. His experience spans public research institutes such as Max Planck Society and RIKEN, as well as leading corporations like Microsoft and IBM Research. This journey led to the founding of EdgeCortix, a company committed to optimizing AI processing at the edge while minimizing power consumption. Satya observed that many powerful AI solutions were ineffective in edge scenarios due to excessive power consumption. Unlike most AI companies that traditionally prioritize silicon devices and adapt software afterwards, Satya believed that there had to be a better approach. Thank you for joining us today, Satya.
Thanks for having me, Daniel.
To start our conversation, can you tell us what brought you to EdgeCortix? You know, I'd love to hear a bit of a background story on you and the company.
Sure. I think you've summarized it fairly well in the introduction itself. Spent the better part of the last two decades building frontier AI models from research all the way to deploying them in production systems. In that journey, I've not only worked on building these AI models itself, but also kind of witnessing firsthand the challenges we face when we try to deploy them at scale, especially across systems that are constrained by power, size, and many cases require real-time processing. Especially my own experience with the robotics domain, what we now have come to call physical AI, convinced me that fundamentally in the last 6 to 7 years where the industry was, it required some first principles or grounded thinking where one needs to build the software and the AI semiconductor or AI processor together from the ground up, really co-designing them such that we can head on tackle the challenges of making AI processing at this edge landscape a lot more energy efficient than what it is, and really without sacrificing the solution aspect that a customer would be accustomed to. That means not making it more painful for the customer to deploy the solution on a new type of hardware, but really building hardware and software together where deployment becomes seamless. So that's really kind of the, you know, my own journey and what led us to founding EdgeCortix.
Oh, interesting. So can you share a little bit more about EdgeCortix and your core product, Sakura 2? Sakura is cherry blossom?
That's absolutely right. So Sakura or Sakura 2 is, you know, it's named after the cherry blossoms in Japan, where we are headquartered as well. And just like, you know, cherry blossoms, you know, every year they bring a renewed energy and joy to the overall society. We imagined Sakura 2 to effectively do that to the industry, especially across the overall edge AI landscape. It is one of our flagship products today in the market on the hardware side. But what we really offer is an integrated platform from software all the way to the silicon. While Sakura 2 is designed as an accelerator or what we call in the industry a co-processor, effectively enabling customers to take that device and augment an existing system rather than replace it. Think of it as a 60 trillion operations per second capable device, which is able to operate in under 8 watts of power consumption. As a result, it can bring the value of the latest multimodal applications like large language models, language vision models, or what we now call generative AI, including traditional vision applications, directly to devices and systems that are constrained by power and size. Your robotic systems, aerospace systems could be as constrained as a satellite or a space rover operating in a harsh environment like space. And across that gamut, Sakura 2 really was designed to provide that efficient AI processing without requiring the customer to entirely change the system. They can take our M.2 modules or PCI cards, a small form factor solution, augment the existing system, essentially add it onto the existing system. And then our software does the rest of the heavy lifting, enabling our hardware to easily talk to whatever is the host processor, be it ARM, x86, or even RISC-V.
Interesting. So Sakura 2 is small, highly energy efficient, and high performance. I imagine there's significant interest in leveraging small compute boxes or creating combination solutions for Sakura 2 and other processors to deliver on the customer needs. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we've been witnessing in the last few years. You know, we essentially announced Sakura 2 a little bit over a year, and then we've been steadily working with customers across the globe, deploying that across many customers from early phase to kind of late stages. And what we have witnessed is the common theme across almost all our customers, which at this time spans over hundreds of customers across Japan, US, Europe, and some parts of Asia as well, is the theme of requiring low power consumption, typically under 20 watts of power consumption, most of the edge applications that we are targeting at the system level, while also requiring performance that is able to run the latest large language model or vision models. Think of essentially a model like Llama 3 with 8 billion parameters. It's a quite a sizable model. And if we have to now run that, not just in isolation, but in parallel to other additional models, directly in a small form factor box that may sit on a factory floor or on a robot itself, that requires considerable amount of performance, but also more importantly, efficiency to be extracted from that system. That's what Sakura 2 is delivering on. And of course, in order for that to work, it has to work in conjunction with the software stack. And that's really where we think that Sakura 2 with an existing system, when paired with our Mera, really enables a solution that is no longer additive, but really exponential, where we are able to deliver additional value to the system that would originally not be captured through our competing solutions or traditional GPU-centric processing, which is a lot more power heavy.
Right. You know, I was reviewing your website, and it looks like you and the Edge Cortex team has been very busy the past year with a lot of news. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Absolutely. It's been a fantastic year overall, and I think there have been a number of different things that we've been able to achieve and announce. If I look back, I think some of the prominent things that has really stood out over the year, last year, we have been working with NASA on space applications for a while now. Really kind of our core, I would say, motivation has been to design for the hardest of constraints, both for our software and hardware, because that effectively enables that even the terrestrial applications or commercial applications to be a lot more robust. And last year, we essentially completed the testing with NASA very successfully with our latest Sakura 2 product, which is in mass production today, demonstrating that just like Sakura 1, which was previously tested by NASA, we came out with flying colors. What this means is that our commercial product, as a COTS product, what we call commercially off-the-shelf device, without requiring any special packaging, no additional cost, is able to withstand radiation impacts from low Earth orbit, geosynchronous orbit, all the way to lunar missions at 10 times higher radiation tolerance compared to competing solutions in the market, which may also require special packaging. We think this is really a game changer. So that's been a fundamentally new discovery on our front, at least, which is now enabling us to work with partners and companies in the space area. And today we are collaborating on from prototype to a system that could be deployed as soon as 2027 from LEO applications all the way to lunar mission solutions. Last year, we also saw a tremendous amount of customer engagement. Overall, our customer pipeline grew significantly. We have seen a significant growth in our overall revenue numbers as well. While I'm not sharing the exact numbers, but overall, you know, we grew our company's top line by more than two times. And what we also saw last year that stood out has been a significant amount of non-dilutive funding that goes a long way for companies like us. I think one of the things that stood out last year was an award that we received from Japanese government through their Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry, where as of today, collectively, we have been able to secure almost $50 million in active projects, and around $20 million of that was awarded to us last year, which paves the way for our next generation chiplet-based solutions going beyond the current generation Sakura 2. And last but not the least, last year was also significant for us for all the work that we are doing on dual-use applications, especially in defense aerospace areas, where we became the first Japanese company to receive a direct contract with the US Defense Innovation Unit. And today we are working very successfully with them across various stages, some of which are very close to seeing deployment, with different departments across the overall U.S. Air Force.
Right. You know, I did see the report from NASA. Very interesting. What is the long-term impact of that level of radiation resiliency testing on space exploration?
Overall, you know, it really opens up the landscape of not necessarily requiring to spend millions, in some cases billions of dollars, to build a completely esoteric space-grade hardware, which may find difficulty in working with current generation software ecosystem. And that's been the concentrated effort that NASA, through a program called NASA NEP, NASA Electronic Parts and Packaging Program, essentially started working with our devices, where the objective has been, can we take the commercially off-the-shelf devices, that means devices that were originally designed for commercial applications, and ensure that they can work and withstand the harsh environment on space. Now that we have proven that with our Sakura devices, this really showcases that even open source software ecosystem, that means the broadest amount of software today is really open source, like the machine learning frameworks, whether that's PyTorch, TensorFlow-Lite, ONNX, as well as AI models that are now being deployed across the commercial sector, can, in combination with hardwares like Sakura 2, which is now tested from a radiation tolerance perspective to work in space, we can bring all those models and the benefit of those AI applications directly to space environment across satellites all the way to lunar missions. And that really becomes a game changer, where we don't have to necessarily spend millions of dollars to essentially build a space-grade product, which may find it a lot more challenging and difficult to work easily or seamlessly with existing software ecosystem. I also had a fantastic opportunity last year to be on a panel together with one of our customers, partners, iSpace, their chief engineer, Jeremy Fix, and I. We really talked about how we are working together to find the best ways to integrate our Sakura 2 hardware, which has gone through these NASA testing across a number of different projects, which in the more near term can span from supporting satellites all the way to landers and rovers, enabling really AI enabled and efficiencies that we can achieve by bringing frontier models across autonomy, navigation, and advanced processing with such compute platforms. So I think that's the overall impact of the NASA results. And it really opens the door for many different applications in space. In a manner, I would call that the final frontier.
That's amazing. So can you share more on what's next for Edge Cortex? You know, what's going to happen in the next maybe 1 to 5 years?
Well, we are not stopping. We are accelerating. We are growing at a tremendous pace. And what we are now working on in terms of our next generation is what we call Sakura X. And I'll give you a little bit more insight onto that. So today in the industry, with Sakura 2, which is already delivering value as a co-processor, it's really designed for what we call the thick edge, effectively applications that require a high performance in the tens of tops of compute, but needs to operate in few tens of watts of power consumption or lower. And that's an area where Sakura 2 delivers great value. But when we scale up, and today we are seeing that with humanoid robotics platforms, physical AI's growth, as well as things that are moving at the intersection between traditional edge and maybe even the data center, that's an area where you require a tremendous amount of compute growth, maybe also combination with next generation communication systems without increasing overall power consumption. That's what we are now working on delivering with our next generation Sakura X platform. It's a chiplet-based platform, which enables a significantly greater performance scale up compared to Sakura 2, without increasing the power consumption significantly. So we maintain our overall efficiency focus while delivering on the latest AI models. And that's also supported by the Japan's Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry, and what is known as the New Energy Development Organization, NEDO's project funding that we've been able to secure over the last few years. And I'm really excited to bring that to market very soon. So we'll have a lot more things to share about where, how we are going to bring that to market. We have already working with lead customers even before we have, started bringing the production chip to market. And I think that really showcases both the appetite and the excitement that we are witnessing from customers across industrial robotics, as well as aerospace sectors, who are seeing value in higher performance, but at low power, in a manner, we see Sakura 2 and our next generation Sakura X to enable us to increase our footprint across the overall market. And that's really the next generation that we're working on.
Oh, that's impressive. I look forward to having you back to talk about it. So final question, how do customers normally engage with your company?
Fantastic question. So we work with both our direct sales channels as well as, you know, we work with our partner ecosystem. We work with a number of different, you know, kind of distributors and resellers as well. Prominently in the public domain, we work with companies like WPG. We, in fact, in North America, Hakuto, for example, in Japan, amongst others. I'm not, of course, naming everybody. We also work with companies, for example, in Saudi Arabia. We've been partnering with a company called Eptikar to essentially enable our solutions to enter all of these markets. And then, of course, our own sales team and sales channels work together with our direct enterprise customers, OEMs and ODMs. We are also, you know, for folks who are interested in our hardware as well as software, all the information is available on our website. As a result, it's really quite seamless to be able to even request access to any of our hardware. If somebody wants to test out from an evaluation platform, it's very, very simple to be able to reach out to us. Or they can also, of course, work with our distributors and channel partners when they're looking for a scale of deployment.
Thank you, Sakya. Great conversation. It's a pleasure to meet you. And yeah, do come back and visit again so we can hear about your progress.
Likewise, looking forward to it.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.